Saga 960 AM presents The Spin, covering the human side of sports, music, and today's news for Mississauga, the GTA, and beyond. And now, please welcome your host, Barry Davis.
And good evening to you. I do promise tonight to not speak of the weather because, let's face it, it just puts us all in a crappy mood, right? Let's think of warmer times. Let's think of times where the sun is shining. You know, I was shoveling my driveway today again, and in my mind, I just thought of it as sand. And I imagined myself on the beach and just working my way to the ocean. And then, you know, frostbite started to kick in, and I realized that, yeah, it ain't going to happen. Winter is still here, folks. I don't care what the groundhog says. But hey, spring training is now officially underway. Pitchers and catchers are there. And speaking of pitchers and catchers, we're going to talk to my good friend Brian Giroliman for his weekly segment Behind the Plate. And we're going to find out about the relationship between pitchers and catchers. How vital is it? What happens if you don't like the guy that's pitching? What is said when you go to the mound for a visit? Brian Giroliman, never short on stories, will have plenty of them. In the world of entertainment, Bill Harris will join us as he always does on Thursday nights. And this week we talk about streaming services like Netflix. What is going on with cable TV? Are more and more people starting to end their subscriptions with cable and simply binge watching their favorite shows on Netflix? Where is this going? Are we going to pay more? Will sports end up being on Netflix full-time? And what does this mean for all the cable networks? A very cool conversation coming up with Bill Harris. Finally, and last but not least, we will be joined by MLB player agent Joshua Kuznick. And Joshua is a man that is not afraid to speak his mind. If you follow him on Twitter, you'll have seen that. And this week, I'm going to be talking to Josh about a tweet that was sent out recently by Justin Verlander. And a lot of people jumped on that and ripped Justin Verlander. We're going to hear the players slash agent side of this story and find out if baseball really is broken and what can be done to fix it. We have ourselves a very jam-packed show, folks. Lock it in. Stay with us here over the next hour. I'm Barry Davis. This is The Spin on News Talk Saga 960.
Looking to do something with the family over March break? Look no further. Your Mississauga Steelheads have rescheduled the January 31st matchup against the Erie Otters for Tuesday, March 12th at 7 p.m. Kick off the March break Steelhead style. We can't wait to see you there and hear all the live action on News Talk Saga 960.
Hi, my name is David Kurt. I'm a member of the board of directors at Peel Crime Stoppers. What is Crime Stoppers? Started in 1976, Crime Stoppers has expanded to 1,500 programs worldwide, including over 100 across Canada. When you call Crime Stoppers, you never need to give your name or address, and you will never be asked to testify. There's one number serving the entire Greater Toronto Area, 1-800-222-TIPS. Visit peelcrimestoppers.ca for more information. Crime Stoppers. Together, we can build a safer place to live, work, and play.
The Mississauga Marathon is back for its 16th year, featuring a full and half marathon, 10K, 5K, 2K, and relay runs. We have a run for everyone. Brought to you by Pandora's Square One, MNP, Novo Nordisk, and Tim Hortons. Included in all of our weekend events is a race shirt and finisher's medal with free parking and shuttles for all participants and spectators. Race weekend takes place Friday, May 3rd to Sunday, May 5th. The event kicks off with the Health and Wellness Expo hosted at Port Credit Arena, and everyone is welcome. You don't want to miss out on this fun-filled community event. To learn more, visit MississaugaMarathon.com.
News Talk, Saga 960. Is the home of Raw Mike Richards. And just what do the famous say? Bobby Orr.
Mike, congratulations on the show. Heard great things about it, and nice being with you.
Russell Peters is in studio, but he's going to be rushed out because he must hit CP24.
I was trying to hang out with you, Mike.
I know. It was great.
Mike has a good vibe. You know when you go into a place and you know the person's cool? I was supposed to leave about half an hour ago.
Hey, T.O., what up? Fake Jim Rome in the house with JR, Clarence, telling stories about he and Gretzk, gutting each other, talking some smack, going down to SoCal, and fist fighting. What would you do and how much would you pay for that? Great story. JR in the fake jungle. What up?
That's very, very well done. Very well done.
Mike Lang, the legend, the Hall of Famer.
Oh, Mike, it's one of my favorite shows to do. You know that. And you have such a good approach to the game, and you enjoy it, and you have fun with it. And God bless you.
News Talk, Saga 960, home of Raw, Mike Richards. Weekday mornings, 6 to 9.
You're tuned in to Saga 960 AM.
You're listening to The Spin with Barry Davis on Saga 960 AM.
And thank you very much, Tim Langton. And there is a voice you're going to be hearing a lot more of very soon. Yes, folks, Blue Jays fans, baseball is coming back very soon. And it can't come back sooner enough because, like you, I'm sick and tired of winter. I'm done with it. You know, I'm not one of those people that complains about the winter. But with that said, at some point you're like, okay, enough. Enough. I'm ready to move on. And we're all ready to move on. So what do I do with my time in the winter when there's not a lot of baseball on? Yeah, I like to watch hockey and I watch basketball. But I find myself spending more and more time watching shows, binge-watching shows on Netflix. Do you do that? Do you find yourself looking for shows and then you find one? And instead of watching it once a week like you would for regular TV, and as I did growing up, you literally can watch an entire season of a show. In fact, an entire 4, 5, 6 seasons of a show in the span of a couple of weeks. That is something we did not have the option of doing many years ago. Of course, when DVDs came out, we were able to buy complete series and seasons of shows that we would watch. And maybe that was where Netflix kind of got the idea of how people like to do that. I think we also like to watch TV shows without commercials. The question is Netflix the new wave? Is this going to be what we will be watching predominantly in the future? Will cable be gone? I still have my cable, but I know a lot of people that have already given it up and have decided, nope, I just don't have any interest. Joining us now to talk about Netflix is our regular contributor on Thursday nights, entertainment writer Mr. Bill Harris. Well, Bill, we kind of teased it last week, but I want to go in deep this week about the fact that fewer and fewer people are watching cable TV now, and it seems more and more are spending days, hours, weeks in front of Netflix or other streaming services binge-watching shows. How far do you think that Netflix has come since the day that they came out? Because I know when they did, I heard people talking about it. I'm like, well, what the bit? You know, why would I want this? Why would I want this? And then once I had it, I'm like, how did I live without this?
That's true, Barry. Now, first of all, let me say, I'm not particularly comfortable with the thought of you and I teasing anything to someone. I don't know why, but amazing when technological changes arrive, how they are suspicious to people. People are wary of them. People think, oh, this will never go. And then you can go forward, say, 10 years. And it just seems like because of that technology, or in the early days of streaming, the issue to me was it rarely worked that well. You know, if you had an Apple or you had a Mac, For a while I had to have two computers going at all times. One was an Apple, one was a Mac. Because some things worked on the Apple, other things didn't work, you know, didn't work on the Apple, and vice versa. You had to, you know, people when in the business when I was, you know, like writing TV, people would start to send you screeners online. Some worked on the Mac, some worked on the PC. I think we're well past the point now. Just about everything works now. And to me, that has been the biggest part in the revolution, led by Netflix, of course, and now joined by many, many other competitors that are trying to get on board and get into that marketplace.
when Netflix started, their choices weren't great, right? They had a few movies, a few TV shows that, you know, we all could see on regular TV. Then something happened along the way, and I imagine as they got more subscribers, they had more money to spend, and then all of a sudden, the list of what they had available really improved, didn't it?
Yeah, it sure did. And really what changed the game for them, Barry, was when they started creating their own content. And, you know, season of Friends so many times, right?
Yes. I love Friends, and I could watch Friends anytime. But and you know what's funny, though, Bill? Friends, to me, is one of those shows on Netflix that if my wife and I are cleaning or cooking or doing something where we can't really pay attention, but we want it in the background, boom, Netflix goes on and there's Friends, and it just airs, right?
Absolutely. And yet here, but it's funny that it's funny that we're talking about Friends, because that's a specific example. What's starting to happen now is especially in the States, and it's going to start to affect Canadians slowly. We'll see what happens. But for example, you can watch Friends on Netflix now, right? Warner Brothers is starting its own streaming service.
Ah.
People don't just want to cede that market to Netflix forever. So Warner is starting its own. Eventually, Warner is going to take back their show, aka Friends.
Does Netflix have to pay for that, though? Do they pay to?
Yeah, like, but when the license runs out, when the contract runs out, Warner was probably going to take back some of their marquee historic programming, aka Friends. Now, if you're a Canadian, what that's going to mean initially is it's going to mean less stuff on Netflix, because it's going to disappear on Netflix in Canada. It's going to go on the Warner streaming service in the States, and in Canada, we're not going to be able to access that streaming service. So things are changing, because people are not going to cede that market to Netflix forever.
And that brings me to another example, and that is when I first got Netflix, I traveled a lot. And for me, it was wonderful to be able to have something to watch on my iPad or computer when I was in a hotel room. However, there were things that I would be watching in Canada, and when I'd get to the States, they're not available. And likewise, I'd find a great show or movie that I'm watching in the States, and I get home back to Canada and can't access it. What do you know about why it is there are some shows that you can't access in certain countries?
It's all about rights, and it's all about licensing deals. For example, if one of the big companies in Canada, say Bell or a Rogers, buys
say Seinfeld.
Bloods.
Okay, sure.
So say Seinfeld. But then if Netflix, so they have the rights to Seinfeld for X number of years. But then in the States, if the deal comes up sooner, maybe Netflix buys Seinfeld. But the contract in Canada for Seinfeld hasn't run out yet. I know we like to pretend sometimes that there isn't an international border between Canada and the US, but it is an international border. And rights fees are sold internationally. So some things that are like sort of arranged on a domestic contract in the United States, that it can supersede, you know, like doesn't get superseded just because, you know, just because somebody else signs a contract in another country. Like, for example, when Rogers started FX Canada, their deal was not for everything that's on FX in the States, because FX itself doesn't own all of that programming. It buys it too. So there would be times when you'd say, well, why isn't this show on FX in Canada when it's on FX in the States? Well, they just don't have the rights to it, and they can't get the rights because somebody else bought it. Like, there would be an existing show that bought on a one-by-one piecemeal basis, and just because somebody else then buys a channel or renames a channel, it doesn't mean that you all automatically get everything in their catalog, because each one of those shows has its individual rights deal.
I'm going to preface this next thing by saying, Billy, I have never done anything illegal or under the table. However, I know people who had found ways of fudging their IPS address or whatever addresses, of using little tricks to access the American Netflix whilst in Canada and vice versa. But Netflix caught on to that pretty quickly, and they've not allowed people to be able to do that anymore.
Are you asking for a friend, Barry?
Yeah, that's exactly what I'm doing. So, Billy, stop doing that kind of thing.
Well, there's all sorts of, you know, what happens these days is if anybody wants to find a way around something, they can find a way around something, right? If they really are determined to. There are many ways to illegally and quasi-illegally watch shows.
Which we will not share on this show.
Which we will not share on this
show.
But
if you want more information, you can call Bill directly.
Exactly. And I will only take a small cut of that. Anyway, moving on. Put it this way, like up until now, the sort of impetus to do that has been kind of, you know, dulled by a reasonable affordability to do it legally. Like, you know, like for example, like a bunch of stuff showed up on Netflix. Netflix hasn't been that expensive, and Netflix always works. So if you the thing about doing anything, streaming anything illegally, is that, again, we go back to that initial problem we talked about. Half the time it doesn't work.
Yeah.
So like if you really want to watch something and you know, it's just either that or a live episode. If you really need it, like, you know, it's tough to rely on something illegal because half the time it won't go. Have you noticed though, Barry, I'm sure occasionally, I'm sure a guy who makes as much money as you do doesn't, you know, go line by line over his credit card bill. But you just, you know, write a big check and yeah, pay it every month.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what my story is, Bill.
That's what I figured. Netflix's price has started to creep up.
Yes, I have noticed that.
$7.99 that you and I probably paid when we first signed on to it. I think it's up to $15.99 now. It's, like, that's almost double the price.
Yeah, it's moving up.
And that's going to, we're going to creep into an area here, and people are going to end up with a bunch of you know, if they want things, they're going to have subscriptions to a number of different things. You know what's going to happen, Barry? Some of those companies are going to start going together, and right, they're going to start offering bundles.
Oh boy.
And guess what we have then? We have basically cable.
Yeah,
and I think that's where it's headed, because people aren't going to want, you know, 15 subscriptions to 15 different services, no matter how cheap they are.
Right.
But I think they're going to start bundling, and I think that wave of the future, or back to the past, however you want to slice it.
Okay. Let's go back to happier times with Netflix, and the one thing that to me really set them apart was their own original programming. When it began, Bill, I'm thinking, "Oh God, do we really need another Adam Sandler movie or 12 Adam Sandler movies? I mean, is Netflix now the Adam Sandler network?" But then all of a sudden I find a show like Orange is the New Black. And then all of a sudden I start finding more and more things. And lo and behold, somehow the people who own Netflix have turned that into a network where big time movie producers, where TV shows are saying, "This is where I want to be."
Yeah, it's totally. And especially for on the creative side of the business, they love the model in terms of, you know, you don't get as much network interference. You don't have to worry about broadcast restrictions in terms of censorship, etc. If your episode to run, you know, a little bit longer because you've got more to say, there's nothing to stop you doing that on streaming. Like and also because the bottom has fallen out of the movie industry. So all those creative people, producers, writers, directors, who used to do the movies that when you and I were growing up were the ones that won Academy Awards, to get their movies made these days. So what do? They go and they, a streaming service like a Netflix or Amazon or Hulu or all these people who are making shows now, and they have a lot more creative freedom and can make the shows that they want to make. Now, I know a slight roadblock is, for example, on a Netflix, there's so much on there that sometimes you can make a show that you think is really good, but it just gets lost.
Yeah.
Because there's, you know, like, and that's the one danger for creative types is there going to be any promotion of my show, or is it just going to get, you know, it's just going to be another thing that whenever somebody finds it, you know, like when you find it on a plane, Barry, you're going to love it. But they didn't really do a lot of promotion for it.
And that's what TV still has though, right? Because you turn on regular network TV, and if there's a new movie or there's a new TV show, they are just throwing it in your face. And but in some ways, it's a good way because it makes you want to watch it. For Netflix, yeah, I'm just sifting through shows going, oh, that's a Netflix show. I wonder what that's like, you know? And again, you end up going word of mouth. What's a good show? And people will say, I found this. And it's like, I didn't even know that existed.
But Barry, and that also exists even, I swear, like in the business. Like I cover TV and work in the TV, work in TV for a living. And you know, family members will say to me, oh, I'm watching such and such. And I will go, what the hell is that? And it's on it will be some show on Netflix that didn't get any promotion. And, you know, I watch it and I go, God, that's really good. But it's just, there's so much good content. I think we're up to every once in a while, one of the presidents of the networks will help make an argument of some point. It will sort of tally the number of shows. And I think we were up to close to 500 scripted shows last year in the United States alone. And that's not counting the shows that are made for our purposes. It's not even counting the shows that are made in Canada.
Wow.
Now, and you think to yourself, now we're all waiting. This can't continue. Because we all keep saying this can't continue. The bubble will have to burst at some point. It's not going to be economically feasible. There's a philosophical argument to be made, Barry, that some people say we are entertaining ourselves to death, and I think that there's a part of that that is sort of true. But we'll it's going to stay profitable forever. So we're going to have to see where it all lands. But I think what we're headed to is some sort of like more partnerships among these streaming services, and there's going to be a form of bundling that consumers are just going to have to deal with.
How close do you think we are to seeing a Netflix movie be taking home an Academy Award?
Oh, I think we're probably, I don't think it's that far away at all. Like Barry, like how many years ago did it seem absolutely preposterous that something from a streaming service would win like a best drama at the Emmy Awards?
Yeah. Wasn't that Amazon?
I think it was the Handmaid's Tale one, I believe. And there were, and that's Hulu in the States. There are moments in history that once the tipping point comes, then everything changes. I remember there was a big deal a couple of years ago when they realized for the first time, no show from a broadcast network had been nominated in like the best drama category at the Emmys, not a single show.
Wow.
Now it seems when you look at it, sometimes it seems, more unlikely that there would be one. I think maybe This Is Us gets nominated every last couple of years, but that's probably about it. It's all streaming services and cable shows that are dominating, and even from the cable shows going more toward the streaming side. So that just shows you it was a preposterous idea probably 4 or 5 years ago, and now it is absolutely the norm and commonplace. So if it can happen in TV, why can't it happen in movies?
And why can't it happen in sports? And what we saw last year, Bill, and I think it scared the living crap out of a lot of people, was Toronto Blue Jay games being broadcast, and same with every team in Major League Baseball, on Facebook of all places. And to me, that is a dangerous trend, because I think the only thing that is really keeping network TV alive is the fact that sports is something you need to see live. You can't binge watch sports. You have to be watching it, as it's happening. But once streaming services tap into that market, where are we going with sports and commercial TV?
You know, Barry, when I said off the top of the show that I was uncomfortable with you and I teasing something, that we need to tease this one, because that is a big conversation that I believe that I am happy and more than keen to have with you. And I think that's one that we need a full episode.
All
because,
right.
That is a big, big topic. So this is, I hate to do this, but yes. I think this is another tease.
Okay. So let's look at next week. We go into sports and where this is going to go for sports and for those sports networks, because that's... things are changing. Well, Bill, I would love to talk to you longer, but right now the streaming network that we're using to talk to you on is cutting out. And
What did we say, Barry? It's all great when it works.
Yes, exactly. And Bill, when you do work, you work well. So thank you very much. And next week, will you be back in normal climates of winter?
I will be back huddled up, hopefully with a hot coffee in front of a fireplace, but trying to shield myself from the cold of Canada. But Barry, as you know, for somebody who has traveled a ton of time for work, as you have, as I have too, it's always nice to be home.
Yes, sure is. But wait until the snow melts. Billy, talk to you next week, sir.
You bet.
There is Bill Harris, who joins us each and every Thursday here on The Spin. Up next, another one of our regulars, Brian Gerolamon, former Blue Jays minor league catcher, joins us. I'm Barry Davis, and you're listening to The Spin on News Talk Saga 960.
Looking for something fun-filled and entertaining to do with the family on February 18th? The Mississauga Steelheads invite you to the PFFC for a cross-conference matchup against the London Knights. The Steelheads are also offering a family value pack valid for family day only. Order yours today and enjoy 4 tickets, 4 drinks, 4 popcorns, and 4 souvenirs for just $60.
The Mississauga Marathon is back for its 16th year, featuring a full and half marathon, 10K, 5K, 2K, and relay runs. We have a run for everyone. Brought to you by Pandora's Square One, MNP, Novo Nordisk, and Tim Hortons. Included in all of our weekend events is a race shirt and finisher's medal with free parking and shuttles for all participants and spectators. Race weekend takes place Friday, May 3rd to Sunday, May 5th. The event kicks off with the Health and Wellness Expo hosted at Port Credit Arena, and everyone is welcome. You don't want to miss out on this fun-filled community event. To learn more, visit MississaugaMarathon.com.
Hi, this is David Kurt. I'm a member of the board of directors at Peel Crime Stoppers. Crime Stoppers needs your help to stop marijuana grow-ops in your neighborhood. Pot grow-ops are infiltrating communities across Canada. The best defense is to be aware and get to know your neighbors. Most tips received about suspected grow-ops turn out to be correct. If a home in your neighborhood undergoes renovation but no one moves in, or if it appears that no one lives there, you may have a grow-op on your street. If you suspect a home hides a grow-op, call Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS. That's 1-800-222-8477.
You're tuned in to Saga 960 AM.
You're listening to The Spin with Barry Davis on Saga 960 AM.
Coming up to 28 minutes after 7, Barry Davis with you here on a Thursday night. It is time now, as we do every Thursday night, to talk to former Blue Jays minor league catcher Brian Gerolamon. Brian, we talked the last couple of weeks about your relationship with Roy Halladay, and it was in some ways a little bit of a one-sided relationship. But for the most part, how important is the relationship between a catcher and the pitching staff?
You know, it's a great question, and there's so many different ways to answer that question of why it's so important and how to kind of develop that relationship. And to be honest, that's why spring training is so important for both pitcher and catcher, to get to know one another. And the best way that I can always communicate it with, especially younger catchers out there, or even guys starting to make it to the show, is, you know, pitchers have, it's a unique life to be a pitcher. So how do you develop a relationship with them? And I'll give you the example of spring training again, is when you go out to spring training, you don't know anything about this person, especially if they're a new player. So how do you develop a relationship? Pitchers have a tough life because they run so much and they don't pitch every day, especially if they're a starter. They pitch once every 5 days. And me as a hitter, to give it to the guys that aren't catchers or pitchers, for them to understand how important this is as a hitter, we all love batting practice. We all love to hit.
However, and that's the water cooler place, right? That's where you're shooting it with your teammates, right? You're just chatting
100%.
Between. Yeah.
Yes.
It's like being on the golf course.
No doubt. And we all love taking batting practice. However, it really stinks when you got a guy throwing you BP that is terrible at throwing you batting practice. It is terrible. Now, to correlate that with the pitcher, is their batting practice is when they throw a bullpen. So as a catcher, how do I develop a better relationship with the guy is to be locked in during that bullpen. And because that's that one time that that guy gets to work continuously, besides when he's running. You know, so the way I kind of correlate with younger players is if you want to get the respect of the pitcher as a catcher, be locked in during their bullpen and show them that you care, show them that you're paying attention. And that's kind of where the relationship starts to form, because now the pitcher will start listening to the catcher and develop a relationship because he can tell he's actually paying attention during the bullpen. And it's hard, especially in spring training. And Barry, you know this, you, as a catcher, you're catching eight bullpens, six bullpens a day. It is really difficult to stay locked in because we are tired. Our legs are killing us. It's very difficult, but that's kind of where the relationship starts.
Yeah, for people who are unaware, and I know a lot of our listeners have been to spring training, but those who aren't, there's an area where there's, what, maybe six mounds in Dunedin, and a catcher will be there with maybe another there'll be a lineup of maybe five catchers, one for each mound. And during that session, you may catch four, five, six different guys doing their throwing program. So, yeah, it's like rotating kind of thing where it's you don't even know who you're going to get sometimes or how long you're going to get them for. But is it important maybe for catchers, or is it even possible before you even get on the mound to just, especially if it's a guy you've never spoken to before, talk to them away from the mound, get to know them, their personalities, what they're like?
Yeah, and it's tough too, just because, you know, especially in spring training, there's so many new faces. So the most conversation you really have, especially if you don't know them, is, hey, how you doing? My name is Brian Giralman. Nice meeting you. And usually we both already know of each other. We just don't know each other. And I guarantee there's fans out there that when they watch guys play on TV and they see somebody like, oh, I guarantee, I don't know if I'm allowed to say this on air, but this guy's, he's a prick. And so that interpretation gets blown out by the media. This guy, you see him throwing his helmet, throwing his gloves. So you're like, oh, this guy's a prick. And then you meet him and he's one of the nicest guys in the world. It's just that they see them when they do blow up a little bit. And they see them when they're really emotional during a game. And that kind of gets blown up. So we really can't go in there feeling a certain way about a player until we actually get to know them. And just meeting them isn't going to do anything. Seeing them compete on the field, how they go about their business, is how you get their respect. It's how you learn about them and so on and so forth.
And Brian, I know you talked about before you caught Roy Halladay that Rod Barajas kind of came and told you a little bit about him, about, you know, be careful of this, be careful of that. Is that talk that goes on a lot between catchers of, you know, who you got today? Well, I got Davis. Oh, man, he's an idiot. You know, this is, you got to treat him with kid gloves, or you got to boost him up because his ego is this and that. Is there a lot of that chit-chat between catchers sharing information about not just what pitchers throw, but what they're like as people?
Absolutely. And sometimes it's very difficult. Even if I went up to somebody and said, hey, with this guy, you got to be aggressive. You know, you got to take charge of him on the mound. If you don't take charge of this person on the mound, they're going to bully you. And they'll respect you more by kind of being a bully on the mound with this pitcher. And to give like a good person to kind of pick out of that would be, I would treat, and this is not with the Blue Jays, let's say Max Scherzer. All right. So you look at a Max Scherzer, who's a very high intensity pitcher. With him, he is very aware of his surroundings. He is actually a very smart pitcher, and he's a very intense pitcher. I got to match his intensity when I go out to the mound. But it's hard for, let's say, a younger catcher just getting called up to the show to do that with Max Scherzer, who's a three-time Cy Young Award winner. It's very difficult to do that because there's that intimidation factor, just like how I was intimidated by Roy Halladay for the first time. And, you know, so it's difficult. But you have to, so it doesn't matter if I tell a catcher you have to do this with this guy. It's very difficult sometimes because they're in completely different shoes.
Man, there's so much psychology involved in this, right? I mean, you could be catching a guy during a game and he's struggling and you're thinking, okay, I got to go out to the mound and talk to him. You get out there and he's like, oh, I suck today. I can't do anything right. And then you've got to pump him up, and then you'll get other guys that will lay. You know, I imagine walking to the mound, and it's like, J-Rock, get the hell out of my face. I know what I'm doing, right?
So, yeah, without question, and you hit the nail right in the head right there. So a lot of times we got to be a psychologist and, a psychiatrist. There'll be times where, at the end of the day, the pitcher makes the decision no matter what over what to throw. They have full tail on whatever they want to throw whatsoever. I'm not going to change his mind, but I can try, but I can't use any negativity to get there. So to kind of give you in detail of how I'd go out to, let's say a pitcher wanted to throw his worst pitch to the hitter's strength. It's a pitch that this hitter crushes. He wants to throw it. So how do I change his mind without telling him what to throw? And this is where it kind of is fun. You have to be kind of an artist doing this. But when you go out to the mound, let's say, Barry, let's say you're on the bump and you want to throw a curveball. And you got a guy at the plate that crushes curveballs. And I want to throw a fastball. So I got to change your mind. So I'd go out to the mound and I'd say, hey, get me on your page here. Help me understand what you're trying to do. And you would come back with, I want to throw a curveball. Your curveball feels good. And I would say, there's no question you can throw your curveball. But I'll tell you what, your fastball is the best I've ever seen it. I've never seen your fastball this good. You are hurting my hand. Yes, you can throw your curveball, but I've never seen your fastball this good. What do you want to do?
That's pretty brilliant stuff, right? You stroke the ego into the direction you want it to go. And then all of a sudden in his mind, he's thinking, damn, really? Okay, if you say so, right?
Yeah, and a lot of times it's going to fire him up. And if I was doing that with it, different pitchers, different ways. So some pitchers, I might be aggressiver. I might be a little more firm talking to them. And some pitchers, I might be like, you know, I'll use a different tone of, hey, yes, your curveball is very good, you know, and kind of go into that. So a more aggressive guy be like, yeah, there's no question you can throw your curveball, but I've never seen your fastball this good. You know, so you do a little bit more with the tone of your voice.
But again, to me, it's like that takes time to learn the people, because even if they appear to be aggressive pitchers, you could go up to the mound and find out their personality is very insecure and what you think you're going to get in return. So does that kind of get back to trying to get to know the pitcher as a person off the field as well as on the bump?
Yeah, and you know, that's the cool part is a lot of guys, and this is where like sometimes off the field it doesn't do justice. Because off the field, this person might be the nicest person in the world. You never heard him say a cuss word, anything. But on the field, he's a different monster.
Yeah, you know what? We had Tom Henke on the show a couple of weeks ago, and he's the nicest, kindest, warmest, gentlest guy you'd ever want to meet. But he said that when he would take his, you know, first steps from the bullpen to the mound, there was this switch that would flip, and all of a sudden he becomes the Terminator. And yeah, so you need to know that a lot of these guys kind of have split personalities.
Absolutely. And you learn that through, you know, bullpens. A lot of them, you can tell the person that how they can take information is if I go to talk to them after a bullpen, let's say four bullpens in a row, I go up to them and I let them know I was paying attention by saying simple things of, hey, curveball is nasty today. That thing was one of the better ones I've seen you throw. Your fastball is getting there. Curveball is nasty today. And just by something as small as that, it's letting him know you're not just catching his pin, you're paying attention. And the next bullpen, he comes in and be like, hey, no worries. I go, fastball is better today, without question. Curveball wasn't there as much, but your fastball is great. You're getting there, dude. Letting him know. And then you, on the third or fourth day, now you can go in there. And if he's not doing something right, now they're willing to listen. So like me as a catcher, how I normally do it is I always start with the positive. I would try to always start with the positive before I went to a negative, because if I start with the positive, I'm going to open their ears because everyone wants to hear something positive.
Have you ever gotten into a fight, or not fist fight, but argument with a pitcher while you were on the mound chatting with them?
I've had a lot of pitchers just upset, more so because a coach will come out to the mound and say, ask him, be like, what do you want to do here? And the pitcher will say, I want one more hitter. I can get one more hitter.
Now, is it your job to defend your pitcher there, or is it your job to defend the coach or manager at that point?
It's my job to help us win the game.
So if you agree, whatever you think is the case, you would say, yes. Hey, you know, Skip's right, man. You know, I've noticed, you know,
I'm just very blunt, and I think that's why a lot of times you earn the respect, and that pitcher will hate me today. They'll love me tomorrow. So if the pitcher came out there and be like, what do you got to the pitcher is always going to say, I'm good. I'm going to stay in the game. I want one more guy. However, with me, he'll turn to me and be like, what do you got, Brian? I will say, if I think he's done, I'll say he's done. Get him out of here.
For a catcher, how often does a catcher go out to the mound on their own as opposed to the manager or coach kind of looking at him, go, go talk to them?
A lot of times it depends on the situation. And, you know, I had a really, really good pitching coach in AAA with the Nats that I really enjoyed, because I could go up to him and he thought the game a lot like me. And let's say we had a three-hole hitter who we'll say who could have had a lot of power. And we're up by one run going into ninth. I'm going to go talk to that pitching coach to get on the same page with him on what are we going to do in different situations if this guy comes up. So I'm not going to talk about it with the pitcher, because that's three hitters down the road. You know what I'm saying? I don't want to confuse them to think about the third hitter. I want them to think about the first hitter right now, so I'm not going to bring it up with them. When that situation happens, now I will go out there and talk to the pitcher. It could be just slowing him down a tick. It could be speeding him up a tick. Have you ever seen a head coach telling a catcher to go out there to talk to the pitcher? It's because they want to get a reliever going in the bullpen, give him a little more time to get warmed up.
Okay, what happens if you are behind the plate and you notice that your pitcher needs to go get some encouragement, or you need to say something to him, but that pitcher doesn't speak a word of English, or their English is not very good, and your Spanish sucks? I don't know if it does. It might be good, but how do you communicate with someone that doesn't really understand you and you don't really understand him?
You know some words, and you have to learn some, I guess, some Spanish words to be a catcher, just some vocal point words. A lot of them have some profanity in it.
Yeah.
So I can't really say it, but at the same time, I'd go out there, and if I just need him to calm down, I would go out there and I just be like, because all Spanish players that play, I guess, professional baseball, they understand little words. Like, they understand what the word day means. Like, it's a good day.
Right.
They understand those little. So I'd go out there and I'd just try to make him relax. I don't know a lot of Spanish. And I just go, hola. And something as simple as that, if I need to pump them up, if this guy's really being soft or kind of going through the motions, say some profane words.
Yes. So sometimes humor is a good thing when you go to the mound.
Absolutely. So one of the lessons I learned when I was at a younger age was from Pat Hankin. And I went up to Pat, you know, him being such a successful pitcher, and I actually had him as our bullpen coach when I was in the big leagues with the Jays. I said, what was your favorite mound visit? And he said that, I can't remember if he said it was like Mark McGwire or catchers went out to home plate. Mark McGwire walked to the mound or something one day. I can't remember, but he said he just went out to the mound. He looked at Pat and just goes, hey, what'd you have for lunch today? And it just kind of got his train of thought off of being so, like, he was overlocked in. He was too intense. He got to slow him down. So he just tricked his brain for a quick second and got him to relax.
Man, Brian, it is unbelievable the amount of psychology that goes on between a pitcher and a catcher. Great chat today, and we will chat with you again next week. And if you want to swear at me in Spanish, just let me know ahead of time so I can bleep you.
That sounds good. You got it.
There is the always entertaining Brian Giroliman, former Toronto Blue Jays minor league catcher. Up next, we talk more baseball, and we get into it with a very opinionated MLB player agent who will be joining us, I have a feeling, quite often. Joshua Kunsick joins us next. I'm Barry Davis, and you are listening to The Spin on News Talk Saga 960.
News Talk Saga 960 is the home of Raw Mike Richards. And just what do the famous say? Bobby Orr.
Mike, congratulations on the show. Heard great things about it, and nice being with you.
Russell Peters is in studio, but he's going to be rushed out because he must hit CP24.
Well, I was trying to hang out with you, Mike.
I know, it was great.
Mike has a good vibe. You know when you go into a place and you know the person's cool? I was supposed to leave about half an hour ago.
Hey, T.O., what up? Fake Jim Rome in the house with J.R. Clarence, telling stories about he and Gretzky gutting each other, talking some smack, going down to SoCal, and fist fighting. What would you do, and how much would you pay for that? Great story. JR in the fake jungle. What up?
That's very, very well done. Very well done.
Mike Lang, the legend, the Hall of Famer.
Oh, Mike, it's one of my favorite shows to do. You know that. And you have such a good approach to the game, and you enjoy it, and you have fun with it. And And God bless you.
News Talk, Saga 960, home of Raw, Mike Richards. Weekday mornings, 6 to 9.
Kickoff Family Day with your Mississauga Steelheads for a matinee matchup, followed by a free post-game skate with the Steelheads. You don't want to miss this. For ticket details, visit ticketmaster.ca/Mississauga Steelheads. They'll be taking on the London Knights.
You're tuned in to Saga 960 AM.
Now, back to the spin with Barry Davis on Saga 960 AM.
I spent some time with the wrong ones. Always close, but never quite right.
Welcome back, and it's time to talk a little more baseball here on the spin. And I want to talk about Justin Verlander, who is very active on Twitter, and this past week tweeted, quote, 100 or so free agents left unsigned. System is broken. They blame rebuilding, but that's BS. You're telling me you couldn't sign Bryce or Manny for 10 years and go from there? Seems like a good place to start a rebuild to me. 26 to 36 is a great performance window, too. Not shy about speaking his mind. Neither is our next guest. Joshua Kunsick is a player agent of Major League Baseball, and among the players he represents are Jeremy Jeffress of the Milwaukee Brewers. Josh joins us now on the line. And Josh, the one thing about Justin Verlander is, let's face it, he has almost 2 million followers on Twitter. So you know when he tweets something, it's going to get some play. But it wasn't so much the tweet as the reaction that the tweet received. Do you find that a lot of fans may be a little, say, misinformed with what is exactly going on right now in the baseball world?
Yeah, I do think they're misinformed.
Well, explain.
Okay, so I think anybody who makes the argument that baseball's worse off for what this offseason has turned into would be correct. I don't see how it matters why we're here, but the fact that we are here and 100-something guys are sitting at home, some of the better names in baseball, it really is terrible for the sport. So getting that out of the way, there's this anti-labor sentiment that is permeating baseball right now. And I see these fans on Twitter or social media, and they're carrying the ownership's talking points and carrying their water, talking about fiscal responsibility as if it's their money. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to me that fans aren't revolting more against ownership, that as fans, they're not more frustrated that 20 teams are $75 million under the luxury tax threshold and they're not spending that money. And fans are just like, well, it's good business. And it's not good business. It's freaking stupid. And attendance is declining. This is all bad for the sport. And if you're talking about like nuts and bolts of what I think's happening or possibly is happening, I mean, you're gonna have to ask me. I mean, it's very vast of what I think is happening.
Josh, when you look at players like Machado and Harper, I mean, they're going to get their money, you have to think. They'll sign somewhere and they'll get their money. Is there a bigger concern with the mid-level type of players? And, I mean, we saw last year, I mean, if you are in your early to mid-30s and you are making decent money but not over-the-top money, you are going to have a very, very hard time. You could, at one point last year, put together an all-star team of players that were unemployed.
You can do it now.
Yeah.
I mean, I complained last year. I issued that statement the same day that Brody issued his, and then Seth Levinson released one about how ownership was treating all the players. And I mean, I can't speak on specifics because I don't represent those guys. But I mean, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion anybody gets their money. And even if they do get their money, it doesn't wash away what probably or maybe is happening. My biggest concern is the class of players that aren't getting any kinds of deals now. It's not even that they're turning them down. I said this last year. Same thing happened this year. It's not that they're not getting deals. No one's calling them at all. It's not a matter of accepting an offer. There aren't offers. You're seeing major league players that should not be getting minor league deals on invites, getting those invites, minor league deals with invites, because there is nothing else. And some guys are biting the bullet and just doing that. That is not the system that we all agreed to. I know what they're angling towards, in my opinion. You know, if you want teams to spend to a floor, the inverse is spending to a cap. So I think it's their way of possibly introducing that concept again, the way they did the last time with this international stuff. But I mean, I refuse to just dismiss that this all happened. I can't dismiss the possibility of this being coordinated. I can't. I'm not going to. I'm glad it's so easy for many people to just be like, oh, no, it's analytics. Why is that easier to believe? Why? Collusions happened three times in baseball in the 80s. Some of the owners that were around then are still there right this second. And I don't know why it's being dismissed so easily. That's my point. I don't know if it's happening. I don't. Do I think it is? Who knows? I have my opinions, obviously. But I mean, to be dismissed, to have that idea dismissed so easily is infuriating to me. And going back to what I was ranting about before, I told you I had heard fans and seen fans saying, well, it doesn't make sense. And fiscally, it's this. And then these owners get burned by these long-term deals. The only person to blame when a long-term deal does not work out and then the team's struggling for it is ownership for not spending more money to go fix the problem. If they see a player that is injured or ineffective and they don't feel like it's worth investing more money to fix that issue and just throw their hands up saying, well, it's the player's fault, he didn't do well, that's ownership's fault. That's not the player's fault. Everything's being put on the players, and it's ridiculous. It's not their fault, and you want to start blaming agents. So the thing you want to that I have to accept is that every agent is stupid and greedy. Every player is greedy and crazy. The Players Association has no idea what we're doing. And ownership, to a T, all 30 clubs in MLB baseball, they just figured it all out at the same time the last 2 years. It all just came together for them while everyone else is a moron. How the hell is that likely?
We are in conversation with player agent Josh Kuznick. And Josh, I'm not necessarily going to play devil's advocate with you here, but I'm going to bring up an argument that some have made, saying that both Harper and Machado were offered incredible deals and they turned him down, and that may be part of the problem. What says you?
I don't know. I can't talk on specifics, but I don't believe anything that I've read, because the only people who know those offers are the ball club and the agent and the player. So everyone else is just speculating. So nobody freaking knows. But so what if they turned him down? I mean, seriously, I mean, the offers, let's say the offers from that point were to go down further from that point, whose fault is that? Is that the player's fault? Or is that, you know, the owners taking advantage of a marketplace that they created? I mean, I don't think that's, how are you blaming the players for that? If I told you you were going to get a salary reduction in your job for like, by whatever the percentage was based on what everyone else is making, you're going to make less than that person. And then you're sitting at home because you're pissed off at that. And then my answer to you is, well, you could have signed that contract. It was less money, but you could be working for that money now. How is that an answer? It's not an answer. It's freaking ridiculous.
You know, I made this argument on my show this past week, and that is baseball fans go to see players play baseball. They don't go to see the owners. As a matter of fact, I don't know how many owners people can say they know who they are, or the faces that represent these billionaires that own these teams. So if there is a pot that the owners have for their team, why can't they give players the bigger chunk of that pot? Because I don't give a rat's ass who the owner is. I want to see a baseball player.
And that's my point, is if you have a team and you're a fan of that team and there's a free agent signing that they make a splash on and that free agent signing doesn't work out, there is nothing precluding that ball club from going out and spending more money, because baseball does not have a salary cap. So if you want to blame someone for the team not improving because of something like that, or blame someone for the team not improving for something like that, why are you blaming the player? You're literally blaming a player who had a rough season, which you can get on him for that. That's part of the job. Or if he gets injured, that sucks too. But if the team makes a conscious choice not to improve upon that or fix that problem, if a guy's ineffective, if he's not a good fit, or if there's an injury, why is it being shifted to the player? Why is all of this being shifted to labor? And and I know I'm getting into a little bit of politics here, but this anti-labor, pro ownership, pro-billionaire class Trumpism that is permeating baseball right now is really not great for the long-term viability of the sport. That anti-labor sentiment, I don't know where it comes from. I don't know why it's there. I have my sneaking suspicion there's some overlap, obviously, which is why I brought that up. But it's remarkable how okay with these people are. If you looked ideologically at everyone who is anti-labor that commented on my stuff that I said to David Sampson yesterday, which good luck bringing that up now.
Yeah.
If you look at the comments to a T, the people against the players voted a certain way. And to the people that were for the players and anti-ownership, or at least more concerned about the player rights, they all voted a certain way. It is down the line 100% ideologically. Remarkable.
Josh, for the longest time, the thought of a salary cap in baseball was something that I think the owners may have been pushing for and the players were saying no chance. But if they had a salary cap where there was a decent minimum where you couldn't have a franchise like the Tampa Bay Rays or the Oakland A's, like you had to spend a certain amount of money, would that work in baseball?
But go back before what you just said. We only got to this point because that's what the owners want, right? They set up the system so that choice is now the only choice, seemingly the only choice we can make to fix it. So who set that up? That's my point. That didn't just happen, in my opinion. How does every other sport have it figured out fiscally, like to a degree, but ours all of a sudden is operating in this fashion? And it's just, it's ridiculous to me. All of this is ridiculous. Is your solution by itself a good solution? Maybe. I don't know. I haven't dug into it. It doesn't sound terrible, but maybe. I don't know. But my problem is before that. How did we get to this point where that's the choice? And the answer is that's the system the owners wanted. The Players Association made their choices. We probably don't love all of them at this point. I mean, they do the best they can. I know they do, but I'm not going to start criticizing the PA right now for everything. I know they're working hard on trying to resolve the issues at hand, and I support them fully. But that said, that's my issue, is getting before to the point where everything that happened up until the point of making that choice, that's where my issue lies. How did we get to that binary choice? Well, if there's a floor, we can give more money to the young guys, but then there also has to be a cap. It has to be the inverse. And that's, I mean, I know that's bullshit. Sorry.
We're in conversation with baseball player agent Josh Kuznick. Josh, in your opinion, do you see any way that we're going to be able to avoid a work stoppage?
I can't speak for everyone, but if I was guessing, no. I started saving my money. I told all my players to start saving their money. I know players that are rookies this year have been told to save their money. So when you get into that saving money speeches, you know, you're getting that from your overlords. That's a scary thing.
And, I mean, we remember what happened in 94. And
I was a fan then.
Yeah, and baseball took an awfully long time to recover. And some franchises, you could say, never really did fully recover. I mean,
the Marlins didn't.
Yeah.
We were the big thing in 93, and then the strike came, and then they never recovered with two World Series rings, and we still never recovered.
Well, do you think that seeing that it could be a hell of a lot worse this time around, that
yes.
both sides
oh,
will
well,
have to...
Oh, no.
Because this could be absolutely devastating to the game of
yes.
baseball for a work stoppage now.
Yes, no question. I think it would be absolutely devastating. It'd be the most devastating thing that ever happened in the history of the sport, even surpassing the 94 stoppage where we lost the World Series. I think we've learned nothing as a whole. I mean, if there's one thing history has taught us, is that we've learned nothing from history. So Yeah, it would be catastrophic. And if you remember, and I like to invoke this, is that the NBA and the NHL had labor stoppages within 2 years of baseball having one. And if you remember back in that time, baseball was king before the labor stoppage. Then when they went away, the NHL and NBA took over because of Michael Jordan and Wayne Gretzky. Then the NBA had their labor stoppage, and the NHL was king for a minute with Gretzky. And then they had their labor stoppage, and then the NFL took over. I assure you, if we have a labor stoppage, I mean, we're done. I mean, we're going to be relegated to like third tier status if that happens.
Well, let's hope that, you know, calmer heads prevail and we get this thing figured out, because baseball fans want to see their game, and we want to see our star players, and we want to see the best be able to get on to teams. And wow, you know what, Josh? I had a lot of fun, and would love to do this again sometime.
Anytime you want throughout the year. I am more free to speak this year than in years past, which I was pretty open then too, because kind of limiting what I'm doing, and not to scare everyone, but I am certainly working on an esports project right now outside of baseball, just in case.
Awesome. Josh, thanks so much for your time, my man.
Absolutely.
There is Joshua Kuznick. a player agent who, as you just heard, is not afraid to speak his mind. So we want to thank Josh for joining us. We also want to thank Bill Harris for his input, as always. And, of course, Brian Gerolman, who is never short on some fantastic stories. We will return next week. And a note that beginning next week, The Spin will become a two-hour show. So we can be heard each and every weeknight on News Talk Saga 960 from 6 till 8 p.m. Coming up next on News Talk Saga 960, it is The Convo with David DaCosta and Jody Panu. Have yourselves a great Thursday night, folks, and have a very happy Valentine's Day. I'm Barry Davis. You have been listening to The Spin on News Talk Saga 960 AM.